All right, everybody, welcome back to Writer Stuff. Jeff Circle, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, John. How are you?
Outstanding. Awesome. This is John Stamp, and today with us is Meredith Lyons. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm great. How are you?
Awesome. We met at BoundaryCon, and I thought it'd be a great idea to chat about not only writing, but a bunch of other stuff. Going through your background, I found DJ, black belt, actor, panther-sized cats, and ghosts. Like, yeah, yep. There's plenty to chat about there. So, I don't know where to start, but I think the question, the first thing that popped out, because I met you at BoundaryCon and I was reading your book, and I wondered, as I'm looking at your background, and this is more for my edification than anything else, but you went to you have an acting background.
Yeah.
For me, when I start writing a character, I'm usually like writing the biggest wise ass I could find because I want them to sound funny. And then I go back and I have to go back and like differentiate all my characters and give them personalities. Mm-hmm. With an acting background, does that help you develop characters? Like, do you know who you will? Can you get into them better? Maybe
I think it does. I've had conversations with a couple people about this. So I've had a couple people tell me that my dialogue is really good. And at first I was just like, well, thank you. And then I started like, when I start drafting, sometimes it's just pages of dialogue. And I believe it's because when you are acting, characters first and dialogue is what you're doing. So I think that does come from acting. And I am a character first writer. So I do usually know at least one of the characters really well. And it helps, like with Ghost Tamers, you're probably seeing Casper and Rayleigh, whenever they're on the page, they just kind of wrote themselves. So it helps when I'm writing if I can find at least two characters that play really well off each other. Doesn't always happen, but.
and with Casper and Rayleigh, what was the impetus of that? Because I have a follow-up question about Rayleigh, but, looking at Ghost Tamers, like, all right, cool, she can see ghosts, and then you're like, oh, this ghost is pretty cool, and their back and forth is a really cool dynamic. But I think as I'm reading, it is those two together that like is one of those things that keeps me turning the page, and then you load on the tension and the just very interesting world that you created. Which one came first?
Rayleigh came first, because I had a nightmare that I was riding the L in Chicago after an improv class with my best friend, and it blew off the rails, and I woke up before I died. But it was one of those dreams where you wake up and it's so scary that you're like so relieved that it's not real, but you can't convey how scary it is when you tell people about it. So I was like, well, I don't have anything to write right now. This will make a cute short story. And then I wrote it, and I was like, well, I don't want her to die. And I was like, well, how does she survive? What about a ghost? And so, yeah, Rayleigh came first, but Casper was very close behind. And I knew who he was pretty much as soon as he got on the page. And I think from what it sounds like is you don't know who he is yet where you're reading.
Oh, nope, I do not. I have a suspicion. But I'm also one of those people that tries to call their shot within like the first 5 minutes of a TV show, like figuring out who the bad guy is. So I have my suspicions, but I'm not touching on them because I think it might lead to a spoiler. So I'm going to leave that one go. okay. So my follow-up, and then Jeff, I'll get out of the way so you can talk a little bit. I will ramble too much. So Rayleigh, when I picked it up, Rayleigh is a comedian. And I was like, that is a rare, yeah, that's cool, that background. But I'm just like trying to go back. I'm like, when have we ever had a heroine who was like a comedian where it wasn't like the Miss Marple or what was that Tom Hanks movie with Sally Field? The I don't know, whatever that's way back in the 80s. And it wasn't even his best movie. But I think you kind of answered it. Was Rayleigh kind of, was that background a biographical thing, or did you want to try and merge the idea of a comedian in a scary world at the same time?
I knew that the world was going to get dark, and I knew we were going to have some dark themes. So I wanted there to be some humor. in it. And I thought about just making her an actor because I know that world really well. But I was like, no. And I love stand up. I've never done it, but I love stand up. I have friends that do it. I watch it when it's one of those things that whenever I'm really sad or like depressed, I will just pull up my favorite stand ups and just watch them. And so I was like, I think it'd be great for her to be a stand up. And then, and you hear about these, you know, like Robin Williams, they're so happy, but they're so funny, but they're so broken inside. And yeah, that's what I wanted for Rayleigh. I wanted her to be at her worst when we meet her, and to be making bad choices and to be doing it so out of pain and still be capable of being funny and still be capable of being loved and, you know, clawing out her right way at the end of it.
Yeah, there is that sad. It's but it is a documented thing that all the funniest people are really messed up. And mm-hmm. I guess you got to be a little messed up to be funny, because it's like the funniest people I know are all, you know, very dark humored, messed up, either nurses or cops. And I think nurses are a little more bent than cops are. But yeah, there's always something.
I saw a reel today, like just a few minutes ago, that was like, it was a clip of like an interview. I don't even know what show it was on. I probably couldn't find it again if I tried. And the guy was saying that, like, if you find someone who's really funny, they probably had really depressed parents. Or because, like, kids learn to control to survive their environment by, like, you know, whatever. So it's like, look at their family if they're really funny. But I do think that there is something about because if you are one of those very funny people, even if you're having a horrible time, I know I do this all the time. And I struggle with depression occasionally, but I don't want to bring everyone down with my issues. So, you know, people be like, how's it going? And I'll be like, terrible. But, you know, and then I immediately like make some kind of joke because I don't want to sit in that. I don't want other people to have to sit in that. It's probably a disease. It probably should be treated, but you know. But I thought it was real, and I wanted there to be like some real grief. And I also didn't want people to cry all the time, because no one's going to read a book where you cry like the whole time.
There's probably a niche for that.
There is Bridges of Madison County, The Notebook. There's plenty of, but
wasn't The Notebook sort of sweet too? Like, wasn't there like romance feely feels?
I was an extra in the movie The Notebook, and you're absolutely right. I can tell you all about it, but I won't. But you're absolutely right. It was as wonderful as it was sad.
Yeah. I think you need like the highs and lows for it to be fun and enjoyable. Really, sooner than stick through it, just cry. You got to care about people.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
and it's got to be a reason to keep going.
Yes.
Yeah. Punchline, 1988, Tom Hanks, Sally Field. There you go.
There it is. That nailed it. Yep. Yeah. The only thing I remember, let's see, 1988, 11 years old. I just remember seeing him freak out, that part where he just loses it. And I'm like, isn't he supposed to be funny? Like, I shouldn't be watching that movie. I'm like bored because G.I. Joe's not on and my folks are all into it. I'm like, he's supposed to be telling jokes, right? He's crying. Like, stop it. Like, that's my whole takeaway from Tom Hanks's Punchline. That's it.
Well, there are funny, two people on Goodreads who really do not think I am funny either. So I think it's subjective.
Well, John and I both met you, and we think you're hilarious. So keep doing what you're doing. Yeah.
I disagree. I disagree, but not with Jeff. I disagree with them. I disagree with the one stars.
No. You know, humor.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, humor really is an interesting coping mechanism. Yeah, John and I have seen a lot of things as cops. I've had half a dozen deployments to Afghanistan and other places in the Middle East. And at some point, you got to be able to block it out. So, Meredith, when you were talking about dialogue, and having, you know, done a lot of acting in the past, and you wrote all that dialogue, have you ever turned it in and had someone say, that's too much dialogue?
No, I think my editor was German. It's German. and I think there was parts where she was like, trim this down. But
okay.
I don't think it was so much the dialogue. There was one scene where I just went over the top with something. And when I read it again, I was like, yeah, this is over the top. So I had to like, she's like, can you please make this more concise? It doesn't happen often, but you can go off the rails when you don't, because I'm a pantser. So it's like, when you don't know where it's going, just have them talk to each other for a while. And like, hopefully it'll work out. Most of the time it ends when it's supposed to end. But this one particular time, I just went off the rails.
No, John and I's solution for when you're not sure what to do, we just kill somebody. So we get it.
That's right.
I did that. Yeah. Writing a new thing now, and I was like, I don't know what is happening. Let's add another character. The mage walks in. My friend was like, who's the mage? I'm like, I don't know. He hasn't said anything.
They're going to be dead soon. It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. If I start getting bored, I'm like, let's kill somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. The people who have said that you have good dialogue, help our listeners understand a little bit, if you can. Were any of the people that you talked to, were they able to say why your dialogue was good? Like, what was it? Or maybe, you know, just what is, when you see good or bad, like help give our folks a little idea of, because some people really struggle with dialogue.
Yeah. I've actually had some narrators who told me, which is very complimentary, that my dialogue is really easy to read because it sounds like a real person is saying it. So I think that's one thing. If people are struggling with their dialogue, say it out loud and see if you sound like a fucking robot. Sorry, I can curse, right?
You can say whatever the fuck you want.
Hell yeah.
If you sound like a robot, then unless you're writing a robot character, then probably need to tweak your dialogue a little bit. But I think for people who have trouble with it, say it out loud. And also your dialogue, so if you've got two people talking to each other, I think you touched on this earlier, they should sound like two different people. If you separate out their dialogue, they may have the same accents, they may be from the same place, but you should be able to kind of tell after a few lines who's speaking. Like if you open the book and it's switching POVs, if you read it in the wrong POV's voice in your head, it should sound weird after a couple lines. You might have to go, oh, this is that other person.
And You really nailed something real quick, and this will be the last thing I say right now about dialogue.
You got time. Fill it up.
I started a new segment on the dossier called Audiobook Narrators, and the vast majority of them say exactly what you did of read your stuff out loud. I think you really hit something there when you said that, and hopefully that'll help people who are struggling with like dialogue.
So much in our head, you know, we've got this whole movie playing in our head as writers. And I think it, especially depending on the style you write in, it can become really easy to start writing things that sound pretty or whatever. And it's like, but would a person say that, you know, and, or think it in those terms? I got dinged a little bit because of all the F-bombs I use, but I'm like, she was in a train wreck. She's very correct.
That's how people talk. Like I get yelled at for swearing too much all the time anyway, but you know, what you were saying made me wonder, the people who struggle with dialogue, do they just not know their characters enough? So, I mean, that's what occurred to me as you were saying that, like where our entire conversation is like, you might not know who's talking.
That could be too. I mean, and I've also met a few writers who are just a little awkward. So that may be part of it.
I thought we all were a little awkward.
I mean, we all have our moments. I'm absolutely sure. I was literally talking to my therapist and she was like, oh, why did you think this would, didn't we all think we were weird when we were little kids? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I was very weird. Don't understand.
Yeah, we're people with numerous voices and universes growing in our heads that have to come out on paper. We're gonna have moments. That's just the way it is. The idea of the stand-up comedian mixed in with that fear fear-based content. It's such a good contrast. And then, you know, the way that you put Riley in, what was his name?
Casper.
Her, no, not Casper, the,
Jumanji?
Her, Yeah. When, no, his, no, right in the beginning, the guy who didn't make it to Joe. Well, how do I not remember Joe? Like the name's Joe. I was actually thinking Steve, but, the way you contrasted that, he was the guy who had everything going for him and he's the one that didn't make, I mean, you kind of got to do that to make that character deficit that gives her some place to grow from. But I don't know if it's just the way that their chemistry was on the page, but like, we saw that dude for what, 10 pages? I mean, how long did we have Joe for? It wasn't long. It was the opening hook.
Maybe 5 pages.
Yeah, that dude, it was like when he didn't make it, we're like, oh man, I like that guy. Like, where'd he go?
I actually had to write him a couple of times because when I wrote him in the dream, he'll never hear this. My actual friend Joe, who I based at the, I actually, in the dream, my friend Joe was, and he's fine. I was in his wedding, not in his wedding, at his wedding. And I based the character on him because he was Joe in my dream. And he was actually critiquing me in the dream. He was like, look, you know, and I was like, I know the basic rules of improv, Joe. And so I put that dialogue in the dream and people are like, but Joe comes off like kind of like a jerk. Like we need to like him. And I was like, oh. I mean, because I've known him for years, but it's like, okay, yeah, I need to tweak this because we need to like him in 5 pages. So I actually did have to rewrite that dialogue.
That was just, okay. So he went from being, yeah, he's a jerk, but he's my jerk to Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Ish-esque.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like, I don't know, whenever you've had someone who you've lost, I don't know if you've gotten to the point where Rayleigh just gets drunk looking at pictures of Joe. But she kind of spirals. And I remember it's like you have these horrible thoughts, like, why did this person die and this person didn't? You know, or why am I here and they're there? And I feel like no matter what Joe would have been, and obviously I wanted to make him a good guy, but Rayleigh would have compared herself to him and felt terrible anyway. And felt like she would have elevated him in her head regardless, because she's not in therapy and she's not talking to anyone. She refuses to deal with it. So I feel like anyone who's ever, as an adult, lost someone has always had those. I think you go through those thoughts. Yep. And I think she said something like he would have organized a 5K in my memory by now, but. Is that true or not? Or maybe Joe would have been as devastated as Rayleigh. We'll never know.
It is that randomness of when somebody's not there, you're just like, you know, it was, and it can be as simple as taking one less step than you should have, and, mm-hmm. and that's it, all gone, and you could be standing right next to him. That's right. It's wild. So I'm trying not to step on you and circle. I don't want to interrupt anybody. We got 3 people. I'm like, oh man, talking too much.
No, this is a new form. This is a new format for writer stuff. And so, we're working it out. Meredith, you're a great guest. We've just got a ton of questions. So, what came first, your real life experience, the dream, or the idea for the book?
You had a real life experience. Oh, the ghost experience.
Where I wanted to go. That's where I wanted to go next. That's why we're doing this together.
That did come first, but I didn't intentionally put it in the book.
Okay.
Shall I just tell the story?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm going to tell the story, and then I'll tell the story that happened even later. So I think some of this was probably subconscious. So when I was a little girl, like 10, 11, early double digits, I would wake up in the middle of the night, and my bed kind of faced into the room. So at the foot of my bed, there would be this other girl like pacing up and down the bed, just talking to me. And she was like passionate flow, like gesticulating, like she was working something out. And if I ever, and she would talk for forever, but if I ever tried to comment on anything she said, she would stop, look at me, and then vanish. And I would just be like, go to bed. And I never really remembered it in the morning. I was never scared of her or anything like that. She would just talk. And then one day or one night, I woke up and she was right by the head of the bed, right? Like by me, looking down at me, smiling really, really big. Like she was super, super happy. And she said, "Goodbye." And I said, "There you go."
Nope.
And she laughed, she vanished. And I remembered all the other times. And we try to tell people about it, but when you're a kid and you're like, "This is ghost been visiting me," people are like, "Yeah, you were dreaming." So I just stopped telling people about it until years later. I was in Chicago, my 20s, probably drunk, coming home from a bar with a friend. And I told her the ghost story for whatever reason. And she said, "Did she look like you at all?" And I'm like, "Here we go. She's going to tell me it was a dream." And I was like, "I mean, I guess maybe a little." And she said, "Did your mom have a miscarriage before you?" And I went, "Yeah." And she said, "It was your sister coming to check on you."
Oh, that's calling your shot. Jeez.
I know, right? And so I was like, "Ooh." And so now I like to think that when she was leaving, she was going to actually go be born wherever she was. But so this is the fun part. Now, recently, so I tell this story in book events and stuff. People like it. It's nice. It's heartwarming. So I'm doing my first book event where my parents and my sister live in Montgomery, Alabama. And I tell the ghost story and you know, whatever. And afterwards, my sister comes up and she goes, "That's not the ghost story I thought you were going to tell." And I was like, what was the other ghost story I had? And she says, "Do you remember when you were like 14 and that man used to come and stand in your," and I was like, no. She said, "Yeah, you were really upset. She's like, I remember this. We were in the kitchen and you were telling mama that this man was coming into your room and just staring at you and you didn't like it." And I was like, "I do not remember this at all." She was like, "You said he'd been there like two or three times. And mama said that you just had to very firmly tell him to leave and that he was not welcome." And I was like, "Did it work?" And she said, "I mean, I guess you didn't talk about it anymore." So, okay, I still have no memory of this at all. But then I go down, I'm on TikTok as you do, and I'm going down a ghost talk rabbit hole. And there's this one dude on there, really good storyteller. And so I'm looking at the comments and people start talking about Hat Man. So I Google Hat Man and Hat Man is a multicultural phenomenon. People all over the globe have seen the same thing, different languages, different cultures. This man will come and stand in your room and he is depicted. And you usually experience sleep paralysis, which I got a lot around age 14. Or you can't breathe. And I used to get laryngospasms when I was a child, but then didn't get them again until I was around that age. And I got them a couple more times. Now, Hat Man is depicted, if you read the book, this should give you chills, as wearing a dark coat, a dark hat, like a fedora or a top hat, and you can't really see his face. And so the bad ghost in Ghost Tamer has a dark trench coat and a dark fedora and face. And I'm like, did I subconsciously put Hat Man in the book as the bad ghost?
You didn't do that on purpose?
You didn't do that on purpose.
So I'm like, did I really see him and just blocked it out and put him in the book?
Wow. That took a turn I didn't expect, because I thought you made that guy on purpose. Man, that's awesome. That's some subconscious stuff right there. That's fun.
I was like, "Oh!"
There you go, everybody. Go get Ghost Tamer.
And ghosts are real. And I guess we're to the point where ghosts are real.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Ghost talk, and you'll be like, "This is creepy." Some people stop. They're like, "I'm only in the comments. I can't watch the video. I'm afraid the ghosts will comment through
my I get that question all the time from my little guys, and I'm like, would the world be cooler if there were ghosts, Bigfoot, UFOs, and all sorts of stuff, or not? And they're like, it'd be way cooler. I'm like, well, is there any problem with believing in them? Like, the world's cooler when those things are around. So whether, yeah, I'm in. That's fun.
When you want later, look up plasmoids if you really want to be freaked out.
Oh, I'll go down that rabbit hole all day. That's fun. Yeah.
Here we go.
My wife's going to hate it.
Then you'll be suddenly writing science fiction.
I am writing science fiction.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Then you got to look up plasmoids.
I fell down that rabbit hole in like November, and it was like, oh, I get to make up anything I want now. This is great. Like,
do you write soft science fiction or hard?
I want to do sort of a space opera that I guess you would put as a mix between probably Firefly and a little bit of Star Trek. So not hard.
Yeah.
I want it swashbuckling in it, but I want people to read it because I don't want to go in and, you know, the physics of a hyperdrive. Right. So,
right. No, completely agree. I was chatting with John Scalzi once at one of these things, and I was like, I didn't know who he was. I was just had met him. He was being nice to my friend. And I was like, I was trying to support other authors and buy their shit as you do. And I was like, all right, well, what do you write here? What is this?
what are you doing here?
What is this crap?
I was like, all right, so you write hard sci-fi or soft sci-fi? And he's like, it's soft sci-fi. And I'm like, okay, good, because I don't like it too hard. And I was like, is it scary? This looks scary. And he's like, it's not scary, it's funny. And I was like, all right, I'll try one.
Very suspicious. Later,
I saw the panel and I was like, oh my God, he's like kind of a big deal. I read it and I was kind of like, you're a little harder than soft, I think. Your stuff makes more sense than I do.
Yeah, and well, where's that balance, right? Because in the last 6 months, I have researched on how does a Star Trek phaser work as opposed to a Star Wars blaster work? How does the warp speed in Star Trek and hyperdrive in Star Wars? And I'm like, oh, this is fun. Reading physics is... that's my jam. Like,
so
we're going to make this up.
My next book is called The Dagger of Lightning. And it is, we describe it as fantasy with a spaceship on top, because we were going to try and push it. Originally they were like, we want your book, but we think it might be better fit our list as a sci-fi. And I was like, all right. And they're like, it'll be soft. And I'm like, yeah, it'll be soft. anyway, after the editor read it and another editor read it, they're like, we're going to keep it as a blend. And I'm like, yeah, we are going to keep it as a blend. I got messed up. So I have a different world. They go to a different planet and there's a magical space battle and it's super fun. But they wanted the other planet to be less Earth-like. So I made the sky burn, as you do. Yeah. Anyway. At one point, I'm doing copy edits, and I notice I made the water blue in some scenes and purple in other scenes. And I'm like, crap, what color is my water? And so I'm Googling, like, what color does the water have to be to make the sky purple? And the water doesn't really affect the sky. And I was freaking going nuts in my head. So I'm like, what the hell? So I Facebook messaged John Scalzi.
Awesome.
Do you remember me? Very suspicious about your book.
He does remember me. We've talked many times. He's very nice. And I was surprised the first time that he remembered me. But he writes me back immediately. Like, I was literally like, I was the dorkiest dork. I was like, do you want to hear a question that is very important to me right now, but not important in the grand scheme of life? If not, reading now. And he answered me first with an article about how the sky is actually purple. We just perceive it as blue. And then he wrote back, he's like, don't over explain your stuff unless it's really like important to your plot. He's like, just say that the sky is purple and enough people who care will have read about Rayleigh scatters and they'll just write it off. But he's like, if you start explaining why the sky is purple, then people will poke holes in your explanation. Just let the sky be purple and move on. And I was like, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Scalzi.
Yeah.
And that is such good advice.
Yeah. In the thriller world, it's when you put a trigger on a Glock, right? They're going to get you.
Oh yeah. If you do like,
not a trigger, a hammer. When you put a hammer on a Glock.
Safety. Yeah. I had to click the safety. I kid you not. I have a book upstairs on page 2. It says I had to flip the safety on the Glock, and that's as far as I got.
We're done here. We're done here.
So but I get really upset when people do martial arts stuff badly.
I hope you haven't read Wraith of Shelter Mountain or Jiu-Jitsu Fan, because
I have not.
That was written by a white belt. That was some jiu-jitsu written by a white belt. I'm really good at getting choked, so I wrote people getting choked.
Although I did read my own fight scene when I was in edits, and I was like, I mixed up left and right here. Fixed it. But I am not good at left and right anyway, just in life. So it wasn't too bad. But I was like, oh my God, people would have been trying to think of this in their head and it would have been on the wrong side. Terrible.
Anyway. Stage left, stage right. But I'm reading a book. There is no stage. What are you talking about? Nice. So we were just, the book we were just talking about was Dagger of Lightning, right?
Yes.
Which is fabulous title and fabulous cover. And, you know, that's the idea of blending that magic and sci-fi is, it's getting right in there with, you know, I don't think anybody's been able to do it since, you know, you had the lightsaber wielding wizards in Star Wars.
Like Star Wars is not a sci-fi. Star Wars is a freaking epic fantasy with space.
Yep.
And that is exactly what I did. Instead of calling it the Force, we call it Chroma. But I have what I did, which I am having had a lot of fun with, is I had a normal human middle-aged woman who was kidnapped by the aliens and taken to their planet for reasons. But she says things like, "Okay, so you're gonna do your magic thing," and they're like, "It's not magic. Magic implies haphazardly bestowed gifts. Chroma is trainable, honorable." And she's like, "Potato, potato. It is magic." And I had fun with it because it's like all the things that you would want to say. It's like, okay, the Force, or is it just magic?
That's what everybody wants. That's right? What everybody wants. Yeah. And nobody's been able to do it since.
Over explain it in the sequels and talk about mitochlorians and stuff. People got it. Right. Don't over explain your magic.
Yep.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Mitochondria, midichlorians.
Yeah,
cut it out, George. George went too far.
Was in charge at that time? Was that his sequel, or was that?
Oh, that was his problem. That was George's problem. He didn't sell it off until they started the other ones.
And then it got good. Then they fixed the holes.
I liked the last three I liked, but my kids like the Phantom Menace, and I'm like, oh God, what are you doing?
Where'd you come from?
But I didn't even like that kid. I couldn't stand that kid or Hayden Christensen. I was like, man, they did not do you any favors.
I remember seeing that in the theater. And at the time I had like something against Natalie Portman. I don't know why. I saw that and I was like, you know what though? She earned her paycheck because she had some actual terrible lines and she managed to make them sound halfway decent. Like, she literally had the line, "I love you truly, madly, deeply." Like, why? Just kill the actor, you know?
Yeah. I hope you're saying that on a train station in the rain.
Right?
Yeah. Or yeah, what if you say it with a Jar Jar Binks accent?
Ooh. At least they got the memo on Jar Jar Binks and, like, downgraded him really fast. But
yeah.
You know what they did, though? They did the same thing we always complain about in the government. That dude, he fucked up and moved up. They ended up making him a senator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
They just disappeared him and made him a senator. The guy getting kicked out of his own town turns into it. That's like, oh. And then he creates the empire. It's like, come on, Jar Jar. That's what happens. Incompetence breeds promotion. That's
Miso GS-15 now.
No.
Yep, there's a whole line we could travel on that one, tying that right back.
I think they were trying to do an R2-D2 or C-3PO, and they failed miserably.
Yeah, that one didn't work out. Then they fixed it with BB-8, I guess.
I did like BB-8.
He was cute.
Yeah,
we had a little. It was not a Roomba. It was a fake Roomba, but we named it BB-8. No, we named it BB Clean.
BB Clinton. Yeah, we got a shark bot, and I named it Chief Brody. So Chief Brody texts me every day to tell me how good the cleaning went. Just tying it back. Yep.
I did like that one scene. There was one scene in that movie, and then we can stop talking about Star Wars, where BB-8's following Rey around, and she comes downstairs. And in my head, I was like, they're never going to explain how the fucking BB-8 got downstairs. And then he comes clunk, clunk. And I was like, yes, thank you, consistency.
Yeah, what a design flaw, but it's cute. So we're going to go with it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Meredith, I appreciate it. We're about out of time because we decided to try and keep these to commute time. So
that makes
not
sense.
The 3-hour long marathons that take a whole week to get through.
Short these days, yes.
But before I go, Jeff, what do you you got any news for the dossier? We talked a little bit about it, but you got anything new coming out this week? Anything on the docket you want to talk about?
On the dossier, we have something really exciting coming up in about a week. Simon Gervais, The Elias Network. This book will blow people away, and I didn't bring it with me. It's amazing. I gotta tell you, I hope Simon doesn't take this wrong because I know he's a big fan of the show and he'll hear this. I was a little surprised at how great it is. It's fantastic. So that's a big one on the Elias Network from Simon, and then we'll have Robert Dugoni coming up in the near future too. He's got something coming out.
Awesome. Meredith, I am loving Ghost Tamer, and I can't wait for Dagger of Lightning because I love fantasy with a starship on top. I've got MeredithLyons.com, or is it MeredithLyonsWriter.com?
It's Meredith Ray Lyons, R-A-E, because my middle name is Ray, which is why the R on all the books. But, yeah.
Awesome. And
so from Alabama, is it Meredith Ray?
I am from New Orleans. Thank you.
New Orleans. That's it.
So you got to draw it out a little bit more.
My dad only calls, this is the only person that ever calls me Meredith Ray.
Only when you're in trouble?
No, it's usually affectionate. When I'm in trouble, when you're in trouble, it's Mare Shell or Mare Death. You know, nice. Kids can get mushed together.
Yeah. So Instagram, Facebook, any place else?
All of the social medias are Meredith R. Lyons, whatever.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And I can't wait to finish Ghost Tamer and get into Dagger of Lightning whenever that comes out in an undisclosed time.
April Fool's Day is what it first comes out.
Love it. All right. Well, anytime you want to come back and chat, feel free. Just hit one of us up and you have an open invitation.
This was super fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Meredith. Good to see you. Thank you for joining us. Good night, everybody.
See ya.